Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In our Quran study session today, inshallah, I will discuss grace. Darius suggested this topic because he frequently faces tough questions about our faith, about Islam, like the rest of us who live in the West. We are frequently asked, why are Muslims so angry, so violent and vindictive? Do love, compassion, forgiveness even have a place in Islam? For sure, the atrocities that the likes of ISIS and the Taliban commit fan the flames of misgivings about Islam among non-Muslims. If you go online, if you Google, you will find a ton of anti-Islam articles, especially by evangelical Christians. They often portray the God of Islam, Allah, as a God of wrath, a God of vengeance, violence, and hate, not a God of grace. Is this claim true? What does Islam's sacred scripture, the Quran, say about grace? This is the question that I would like to address today. Let's begin with a definition for grace first, so we all know what we're talking about here. In theology and religious discourse, ilmi kalam, grace means free and unmerited favor, undeserved favor, or as they say it in Farsi, ataye bi istihqaq. God's grace means He freely rains His mercy and blessings on us, not because He owes us, and not because of anything we have done to earn it. It is a gift, freely given. This is the definition of grace. In Islamic literature, in Quran commentaries, as well as Sufi literature, there are at least three Arabic words that they use for grace. Not just one word, at a minimum, there are three Arabic words for grace. Rahmah, Karam, and Jud. Rahmah, Karam, and Jud. All these three words capture the idea of grace. That is, unmerited, undeserved gift of favor to humanity by God. As a matter of fact, two of God's beautiful names in the Quran, Asma'ul Husna, Ar-Rahman and Al-Karim, precisely encapsulate the idea of grace. Ar-Rahman is rooted in Rahmah, and Karim is rooted in Karam, and they both precisely encapsulate the idea of grace, as I defined it a couple of minutes ago. I think the crux of grace would really come out if we contrast grace with justice. You see this contrast between grace and justice quite a bit in Islamic discourse and also in Islamic mystical tradition. Justice, very similar to grace, involves merit, with one notable exception. Justice requires merit. If there is a merit, if the person deserves, then she would receive a benefit or a reward. For example, let's say I ask a landscaper to work in my backyard. He works for 5 hours, and the market rate for a landscaper, let's say, is $20 an hour. Now I owe him $100. If I pay him $100, then I have been just to him. If I pay him less, I am unjust. Now let's say I see a homeless guy on the street, and I decide to pay him $100. I didn't owe him anything, and he had not done anything for me to deserve the kindness. I was simply gracious to him. So in a sense, justice is a two-way street. Justice is a two-way street. There is merit, and that merit triggers a proportional response. But grace, on the other hand, is a one-way street. You receive a gift or a blessing without having done anything to earn it. God has many attributes in Islam. For our mystics, such as Rumi, grace ranks as the number one attribute of God, higher than justice. I will return to this contrast between grace and justice in my second sermon, and that's crucial. This contrast is very, very crucial. But as far as God's beautiful names, Asma'ul Husna, are concerned, as far as God's attributes are concerned, grace ranks as the number one attribute, higher than justice. And by the way, Al-Adl, or the just, is also another beautiful name of God in the Quran, Al-Adl, which means God is just. Now let's ask, why is grace the most important attribute of God? Why? Is it arbitrary? No. It's because it is precisely divine grace that initially put everything in motion at ground zero, at the moment of the Big Bang, so to speak. Big Bang came about only and only because of God's grace. If it were not for His grace, nothing would come into existence. Nothing would come into being. You and I, the cows, the trees, none would exist if it were not for divine grace. In other words, creation, khilqat, creation is an expression of divine grace. Creation is a face of God's grace, as Rumi so eloquently says, قابلی گر شرط فعل حق بودی هیچ معدومی به هستی نامودی. If merit were a necessary condition for God's actions, no non-existent thing would come into existence. No non-existent thing would come into existence. That's very fascinating, what Rumi says. Again, here I'm trying to explain why is it that in Islamic theology, grace is the number one attribute of God. قابلی گر شرط فعل حق بودی هیچ معدومی به هستی نامودی. Rumi says, think about it. If creatures deserved to be created in the first place, how exactly did they earn it? First, you must exist before you can acquire any merit. If merit was the basis for God's actions, nothing would come into existence. No creation, period. God created the universe and all its inhabitants because of His grace. Life is a gift from God. Life is a gift from God. Rumi puts grace front and center. To say that all the other attributes of God, such as love, mercy, compassion, justice, wisdom, they all spring out of His grace. All of the other attributes are anchored and rooted in God's grace. Super, super critical point in Islamic theology. Think of God's attributes as a hierarchy. Think of them as a hierarchy. The attribute on the very top is grace. All the other attributes hang off of His grace. They are all rooted in His grace. That's what Islam teaches. So, no, grace is not alien to Islam, as Islam's critics claim. By the way, can I whisper something? God's wrath is also anchored in His grace. God's wrath is also anchored in His grace. Let's move on. God's grace is universal. All humankind are the recipients of His outpouring grace. Believers, non-believers, atheists, the righteous, and sinners alike. They are all recipients of God's grace alike. God's grace does not discriminate. It is open to all. Now, grace is not a particular action. It's not like calling on the phone. That's a particular action. We all can picture what calling on the phone is. But grace is not a particular action. It's a source. It's a source that feeds all sorts of actions. Think of it as a power generator. When a generator creates power, that power turns on the lamps, your computer, your cell phone, the electric car that you drive. Grace is just like that. Grace has countless faces. It has innumerable expressions. Now that we understand what grace actually entails, when we read the Quran, we will see that grace is embedded in so many verses, except the word grace is not used in those verses. Let me repeat one more time. Don't look for the word grace in a given verse to say, this verse is talking about grace. No. Grace, because it is not a particular action, it is embedded in all sorts of verses in the Holy Quran. We don't have that much time, so just let me give you a couple of examples of verses in the Quran that don't have the word grace in them, but they are actually expressions and faces of grace. Chapter 39, verse 53. قُلْ يَا عِبَادِيَ الَّذِينَ أَسْرَفُوا عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِهِمْ لَا تَقْنَطُوا مِنْ رَحْمَةِ اللَّهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَغْفِرُ الذُّنُوبَ جَمِيعًا إِنَّهُ هُوَ الْغَفُورُ الرَّحِيمُ. God says, O my servants who have harmed yourselves by your own excess, do not despair of God's mercy. God forgives all sins. He is truly the most forgiving, most merciful. Imam Ali says this verse is the most important grace verse in all of the Quran. It is a message of hope. Even if we cut the cord with God, He promises to repair it. Yes, we are to blame. It is our excesses and wrongdoings. We did awful things to betray God. Yet, God steps in to repair the damage, to save the relationship. No matter how awful and huge the damage is that we did to our relationship with God. God does not slam the door on us. He doesn't write us off. All He asks us to do in the Quran is, do not lose hope. Don't despair. If you ask Rumi, what is the gravest sin that anybody can commit? He would say, despair. Loss of hope is the gravest sin. God is hope. God is hope. The hope that you feel in times of hardship, that hope is God working inside you. God is grace. As Rumi says, تو مگو ما را بدان شهبار نیست. با کریمان کارها دشوار نیست. Don't say we have no admission to that king, meaning God. Don't say we have no admission to that king. Dealings with the gracious are not difficult. The God of the Quran is a gracious God. He goes out of His way to save, not to damn. He does not look for a pretext, an excuse to send people to hell. The opposite. He looks for a slight pretext to save people from hell. It is not like if you take one step away from God by committing a sin, He would get angry and push you back 10 steps. The opposite is true. If you take one step toward God, if you take one step toward God by doing a good deed, God will take 10 steps towards you. I'm not making it up. Chapter 6, verse 160. من جاء بالحسنة فله عشر أمثالها ومن جاء بالسيئة فلا يجزى إلا مثلها وهم لا يظلمون. Whoever has done a good deed will have it 10 times to his credit. You do one good deed, you will have it 10 times to your credit. But whoever has done one bad deed will be repaid only with its equivalent. They will not be wrong. What does this verse tell us? God treats us better than we deserve. We're talking about grace, right? No merit. Undeserved favor, there you have it. God treats us better than we deserve. You will be repaid tenfold for a good deed. This verse is actually amazing in another respect. It simultaneously includes grace and justice in a short verse. Did you catch it? من جاء بالحسنة فله عشر أمثالها. Whoever has done a good deed will have it 10 times to his credit. That's grace. And then immediately it says, من جاء بالسيئة فلا يجزى إلا مثلها. But whoever does a bad deed will get repaid only with its equivalent. And that's justice. That's how I invite you to read the verses in the Quran. Grace is embedded in so many of these verses. What is the practical message here in this verse? The practical message of this verse is that it is far easier to go to heaven than to hell. Ignore the nonsense you hear in some religious circles that God is very picky, that if you do not subscribe to a particular brand of religion or don't worship in a certain way, he will burn you in hellfire. That is nonsense. That is not what the Quran teaches. God does not nitpick. Whoever does good deeds, irrespective of religious affiliation, is a candidate for heaven. What are some of the other expressions and faces of divine grace? Guidance, hidayat, spiritual light, nur, peace, salam, the love, hope that we feel in our hearts. These are all expressions of God's grace to us. So God is gracious. How about those who put their faith in the gracious? Those who submit to the gracious, Al-Karim. How would they behave? Well, they receive grace from the gracious and dispense it to others. They are also conduit for God's grace, meaning true Muslims must be gracious in their dealings with everyone. The Quran says, "Do you want me to give you a key to unlock the gates of heaven? Do you want to meet God? Here is the key." This is one of the most important verses in all of the Quran for Muslim Sufis. Chapter 3, verse 92. It gives us the key to the gates of heaven. لَن تَنَالُوا الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُوا مِمَّا تُحِبُّونَ. You will never attain the peak of goodness unless you give out of what you cherish. Isn't that fascinating? You will never attain the peak of goodness unless you give out of what you cherish. The peak of goodness is God. You will never see God, meet God, reach God, unless you give out of what you love the most. Not from the leftovers, not from what things that you don't need. No, from what you love, from what you cherish, from what is the most dear to you. That is the secret for meeting God and God realization. You want to realize God in yourself? You need to live by this verse. All the injunctions in the Quran for kindness and good deeds spring out of this short verse. The injunctions for giving a lending hand to those in need, giving a lending hand to the poor, the orphans, the disposed, the voiceless, the oppressed. All of these injunctions spring out of this short verse. The verse essentially tells us that goodness leads to the source of goodness, God. Goodness leads to the source of goodness, which is God. When you give freely to others, you practice grace, and that's the mark of the godly. But grace is not only about giving, it is also about forgiving. Chapter 24, verse 22. It's about forgiving, and that's an expression of grace. وَلْيَعْفُوا وَلْيَسْفَهُوا أَلَا تُحِبُّونَ أَنْ يَغْفِرَ اللَّهُ لَكُمْ وَاللَّهُ غَفُورٌ رَحِيمٌ. They, meaning true Muslims, they forgive and overlook. Do you not wish that God should forgive you? God is most forgiving and most merciful. There are two key words in this verse, af and saf. Af and saf. What is the difference between them? Let me give you an example. Let's say Alex spreads a rumor about me at work. That rumor ends up costing me a promotion. Now, being a good Muslim, I decide not to reciprocate his injury with an equal injury. So I forgive him. Yet, my heart has not come clean. I still have hard feelings for him. I cannot forget what he did to me. This sort of pardon is af. Af is a sort of pardon that, yes, you forgive the person, you don't reciprocate his awfulness with an equal awfulness, but you still hold hard feelings. But if you go one step further and clear your heart of any hard feelings, that is saf. Saf. That puts the bar even higher. The verse says, وَلَيَعْفُوا وَلَيَسْفَهُ. If you forgive and overlook. So that puts the bar even higher for Muslims. It is not easy to clear this bar. Yet the Quran challenges us to do exactly that. The Quran encourages us to practice forgiveness towards others, just as we like God to forgive our shortcomings. So, again, these are all faces and expressions of grace. Unfortunately, I don't have a whole lot of time to give you other examples from the Quran that describe the other faces and expressions of grace, but hopefully these few examples suffice. Now let me go back to the contrast I made earlier between grace and justice. Super important, very important contrast. Grace, as I mentioned, is the supreme attribute of God and also a crucial virtue for humanity. But grace is not the only virtue. In fact, there are instances where grace is not the most appropriate virtue. I know some of you might get confused now. There are instances where grace is not the most appropriate virtue, and nowhere this is truer than in societal affairs. Let me explain. One day Imam Ali was asked, أيهما أفضل العدل أو الجود, which one is greater, justice or grace? فقال العدل يضع الأمور مواضعها والجود يخرجها من جهتها. Justice put things in their proper place and grace moved things out of their place. Grace moved things out of their proper place. Here Imam Ali specifically has public affairs in mind. He has societal affairs in mind. He says, when it comes to organizing society, justice is a better principle than grace. The state should be founded on justice, not grace. Otherwise, things will spin out of control. Imam Ali got his cue from the Quran. The Quran explicitly declares that a pillar of prophecy was social justice. Verse 25 in chapter 57. لَقَدْ أَرْسَلْنَا رُسُلَنَا بِالْبَيِّنَاتِ وَأَنْزَلْنَا مَعَهُمُ الْكِتَابُ وَالْمِيزَانِ لِيَقُومَ النَّاسُ بِالْقِسْطِ وَأَنْزَلْنَا الْحَدِيدِ فِيهِ بَأْسٌ شَدِيدٌ وَمَنَافِعُ لِلنَّاسِ. We sent our messengers with clear signs, the book and the balance with them, so that people would uphold justice. We also sent down iron with its mighty strength and benefits for humankind. So God's messengers were not just interested in spiritual affairs. They were also interested in creating a society that runs its affairs on the principle of justice. Now, if I were to say this thing in a language that resonates with us in the modern world, I could say it as follows. The Quran, in this verse, mandates that Muslims, wherever they live and in any time period they live, they should strive to create a society where justice permeates the law, permeates politics and the economy. A society where justice is embodied in all social institutions, all socio-political and economic institutions must bear the mark of justice. That's what the verse is teaching us. The Prophet Muhammad is our role model. He was very much concerned with the law, with politics in general. He even engaged in warfare. Some called the Prophet Muhammad a warrior prophet, which by and large is true. Instead of suffering and obedience in the face of oppression, as Jesus Christ would suggest, Muhammad preached steadfast struggle. But his guiding principle was always justice. He taught his followers, fight for justice and be just when fighting. Let me repeat one more time. Fight for justice and be just when fighting. Be just even with the oppressors you are fighting against. Chapter 5, verse 8. فلا يجرمنكم شنعان قوم على ألا تعدلوا اعدلوا هو الأقرب للتقوى فاتقوا الله إن الله خبير بما تعملون. Do not let hatred of others, meaning your enemies, do not let hatred of others lead you away from justice, but adhere to justice, for it is closer to piety. Be mindful of God. God is well aware of all that you do. To better appreciate what I'm trying to convey on the primacy of justice over grace in societal affairs, let me contrast Muhammad with Jesus in this regard. Christian theologians have always stressed that Jesus came to restore love and not the justice of the Hebrew Bible, not the justice of the Old Testament. Matthew, in his gospel, tells us that Jesus declared, "You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth." By the way, here Jesus is referring to a commandment in the Hebrew Bible, Exodus 21 verses 23 to 25, which says, "If there is serious injury, you are to take life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise." This commandment, by the way, actually expresses the principle of reciprocal justice. That's what essentially this commandment is preaching. Now, Jesus announces that Christians should follow a different path. He said, "You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. So Jesus clearly says grace supersedes justice. Essentially, that's what he's saying. Grace supersedes justice. Judaism advocated retribution, qisas. Christianity rejected retribution. How about Islam? Well, in a single passage, the Quran embraces both the Jewish and the Christian position. Chapter 42, verse 40. وَجَزَاءُ سَيِّئَةٍ سَيِّئَةٌ مِثْلُهَا فَمَنْ عَفَى وَأَصْلَحَ فَأَجْرُهُ عَلَى اللَّهِ إِنَّهُ لَا يُحِبُّ الظَّالِمِينَ. The compensation for an injury is an injury equal to it, but anyone who forgives and makes reconciliation will have his reward from God himself. Truly, God does not like those who do wrong. An injury equal to an injury is justice, right? It is the right of a person who is injured to seek retribution. That's a right. But forgiving the injury is grace, and that's what God prefers, forgiveness. Again, as you can see, justice and grace appear in the same verse. In this verse, Islam essentially reconciles Judaism and Christianity. Here, symbolically, Muhammad simultaneously represents Moses and Jesus. Muhammad's mission was in fact to reconcile Moses and Jesus. You can say the same thing about Islam in general, that Islam is a cross between Judaism and Christianity. The writers of Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they understood that Jesus had a different message than the Hebrew prophets, that grace should be the foundation of human life. Christians stuck to this view until they decided to rule, until they decided to form a Christian state and later to build a Christian civilization. That's when they realized that they had to abandon the most crucial teaching of Jesus. The verse that I, from Matthew that I recited earlier. Christians realized that it was not practical to rule by grace. What did the Christians do? They essentially embraced the Islamic position. The best principle to build an ideal society upon is justice. Let me give you an example. We are often told that the US was founded by Christians, that the founding fathers were Christians. Now let me ask you this question. Is grace the guiding principle in our Constitution? Does our judicial branch of government, our courts, operate on grace or justice? It's very obvious. They operate on justice. Just imagine. Imagine if we were to build a judicial system based on what Jesus preached, that if someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. This system would be heaven for criminals, for rapists, for serial killers. Why? Because they would be assured that after they commit their crimes, they would be forgiven. That would be actually an incentive for them to commit more horrible acts. Now perhaps you can see the wisdom in Imam Ali's saying that grace moves things out of their proper place in societal affairs. The proper place for offenders and lawbreakers is jails and not the streets. Let me conclude. Grace is front and center in our faith. The Quran puts the bar really high for Muslims to be gracious in daily life. Grace is a noble virtue for individuals, but human society must be organized on the principle of justice. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.